The U.S. has a long and bloody history of invading Mexican and indigenous lands. Between 1845 and 1848, the U.S. violently annexed Mexico's northern territories, which today comprise of California, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. This after annexing Texas in 1845 and displacing indigenous nations in the region off their lands. And between 1916 and 1917, during the height of the Mexican Revolution, the U.S. Army led an unsuccessful expedition into the northern state of Chihuahua. There, U.S. troops sought to capture revolutionary leader Pancho Villa, who was described as a bandit and terrorist by Washington. While today's drug cartels are certainly far from being anything close to revolutionary leaders like Pancho Villa, many Mexicans feel that their potential designation as terrorist organizations could potentially lead to a new U.S. invasion of their lands. The U.S. war against Mexico was motivated primarily by southern U.S. slave owners who sought new territories for their plantation economy and lucrative slave trade. During the time of annexation, Mexico took a stand against slavery, a country that elected its first African-descended president, Vicente Guerrero, in 1829. Before the U.S. war of aggression against Mexico, the two nations were roughly equal in size. A lot of people don't know that. However, on December 29, 1845, the Republic of Texas was officially annexed into the U.S., admitted to the Union as the 28th state. And the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848 ratified the rest of the theft, with Mexico now being confronted with a nearly 2,000-mile imposed border with a militarily superior power. While the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo promised that existing landowners in what became U.S. territories would not lose ownership of their land, these promises were not kept, and Mexicans were stripped of their assets. 525,000 square miles of land were roughly taken through force, murder, and trickery. And now, of course, the very people are accused of being illegal for coming across into land that basically had been taken from them. Let us go, before welcoming our guests, to a clip reflecting some of this history.
The American West conjures images of adventure, lawlessness, and opportunity. But what possessed us to go west in the first place? It all traces back to an important but not very well-known conflict in the mid-19th century called the Mexican-American War. In the 1840s, America was a pretty young country, and it was hungry to expand. President James K. Polk was especially eager to acquire more territory. He believed in manifest destiny. That's the idea the United States had a duty to expand westward across the North American continent. There was a lot of incentive for American settlers to go west. They could spread religion, strike it rich in business, or just get a fresh start. Needless to say, America's neighbor, Mexico, wasn't thrilled about the westward expansion craze. Both countries were already on thin ice. Mexico was bitter about losing Texas to the U.S. after it won its independence in 1836. President Polk wanted California and New Mexico, too, and he offered Mexico $30 million to purchase them. But they refused to sell. But hang on, conquering the West was America's manifest destiny, right? So Polk wouldn't take no for an answer. He picked a fight, sending troops to occupy a disputed area of the Texas and Mexico border. And when American troops and the Mexican cavalry clashed, Polk seized the opportunity to declare war on Mexico on May 13, 1846. Ultimately, Mexico was unprepared for war. Its internal politics were just a mess, and its cavalry couldn't measure up against the expertise of the U.S. military. After 2 years of fighting, Mexico was defeated, and in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, it ceded a third of its territory to the U.S., areas that include modern-day Utah, California, Nevada, Arizona, and Texas. The Mexican-American War had a major impact because it resulted in one of the largest territorial expansions of the United States. It also launched the careers of a few generals you may have heard of. Future U.S. President Zachary Taylor and Civil War titans Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant.
Texas. It's the second largest U.S. state in both size and population, but it's second to none when it comes to state pride. To truly understand how much Texans love their state, you have to go all the way back to March 1836. That's when a group of Texas rebels signed a Declaration of Independence from Mexico. At the same time, about 200 Texans, including Colonels James Bowie and William B. Travis, and famed frontiersman Davy Crockett, were facing off against a massive Mexican army at the Alamo. After a two-week siege, Mexican troops overran the Alamo, killing nearly every last defender. The Texans may have lost the battle, but time spent on the siege distracted Mexican troops while Texas revolutionaries started to plot their next move. Just 5 weeks later, Remember the Alamo served as a rallying cry for the ragtag Texas Army as it finally won independence from Mexico at the Battle of San Jacinto. The new Republic of Texas's Lone Star flag became the fourth flag since 1519 to fly over Texas, after the French, Spanish, and Mexican. Texas remained independent from 1836 to 1845, when it became part of the United States. During the American Civil War, pro-slavery Texas joined the Confederacy. The Confederate flag became the sixth to fly over Texas.
You know, to our guests and our listeners, I wanted to play that just so you get the kind of tone that these topics are discussed in relation to, you know, anyway, a bit absurd. But it does give some of that background. And Bill Gallegos, a longtime Chicano liberation environmental justice activist, author of The Sunbelt Strategy and Chicano Liberation and Reflections on the Green Economy, also the former executive director of Communities for a Better Environment, one of the leading environmental justice organizations in the U.S., and he recently authored an article entitled Ethnic Cleansing, a Program of Resistance, and he also has an article in Liberation Road, The Historical and Political Significance of the U.S. Annexation of Mexico's Northern Territories. Bill Gallegos, welcome back.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you for that glowing introduction.
Yeah, I tell you, I mean, the upbeat tone in those clips, you know, when such serious matters are being described, like stealing people's land and killing a whole set of people. But Bill Gallegos, in your article, you talk about the original peoples that populated the hemisphere even before the rise of the Mexican state. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I just want to say, just take a little off of the clip you just played before I came on, because the speaker mentioned that Texas joined the Confederacy. And I think a lot of people don't know that there was a large armed uprising against the Yankees in Texas led by Juan Cortina. And he joined with the forces of the United States against the Confederates during the Civil War. A lot of folks don't know that there is that history as well.
Yeah, and a lot of folks don't know that a lot of the people enslaved, Africans enslaved, fled to Mexico and took refuge there as well. So there's that long history of collaboration and solidarity.
That's right. The Underground Railroad ran south and north, but it ran south and people don't know that. So what I wanted to just talk about here was something that's, I think, often overlooked by a lot of progressive and left historical commentators and folks on the left, which is the historical importance of this, the United States annexation, annexing Mexico's northern territories. So I think this is, the way I characterize this is that there are three major historical events, not the only ones, but there are three that are foundational to constructing the United States as a white supremacist capitalist superpower. And that dominates the world. We see that going on now. So the first phase was, of course, the genocide of the native peoples and dispossession from their lands, seizure of their lands and resources. The second was the importation and exploitation of Africans as slave labor, which really enabled the kickstart of the U.S. capitalist economy. And the third that laid the basis for eventual U.S. global hegemony was the theft of Mexico's northern territories. And that annexation largely through military aggression, which, by the way, was opposed by Ulysses S. Grant as imperialist and by then-Congressman Abraham Lincoln. But it enabled the United States to become a superpower rather than maybe France, something like France or Spain, a second or third rate capitalist power, because the territorial acquisition enabled it spread its reach from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast, and this allowed for a vast expansion of the Anglo-European population as primarily settler colonists in these newly acquired territories. So it allowed for this coast-to-coast expansion, making it one of the largest countries in the world.
And Bill, I just wanted to add to that also. I mean, you're absolutely right. A lot of people didn't realize that the territory of the U.S. and Mexico were about equal in size. And I just want to bring in the Haitian Revolution here also, because it was because of the Haitian Revolution that the U.S. was able to expand its territory greatly by kicking the French out. And people say the Louisiana Purchase, and they don't realize that it included Arkansas, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Minnesota, Louisiana, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, parts of Colorado, and parts of New Mexico. So yeah, that, you know, over 500 million acres. So you could see the significance then of the theft from Mexico and what the result of the Haitian Revolution meant for that expansion as well, Bill.
Absolutely. Yeah, so when they acquired these territories, what did they acquire? They acquired some of the most fertile agricultural lands in the world, but lands that are also rich in old oil, coal, uranium, gold, silver, copper, other, you know, very, very important mineral deposits. And, you know, what's profoundly important for becoming a global powerhouse, a superpower, they acquired the maritime access to the trade and resource extraction along the entire Pacific Rim. Otherwise, they would not have controlled ports on the Pacific. So these elements enabled the United States to assume the dominant position that it does today. But it also had a huge impact on Mexico, because Mexico then became subordinated to U.S. interests. It became a neocolonial dependent country, constantly subject to U.S. aggression, both military and political, and enormous economic penetration, which we now see in this new NAFTA agreement that's just been ratified by Congress. So it not only had an impact on this United States becoming a superpower, but it had a huge impact on the nation of Mexico, sealing its neocolonial dependent status. And we see what the result of that is now along the border as the United States pursues its ethnic cleansing campaign, the militarization of the border, and just horrendous crimes against humanity, like the separation of nearly 6,000 children from their families, the death of children and others along the border that have been seized by the Border Patrol and ICE. And by the way, Margaret, those 5,400 or 5,500 children that have been separated from their families, hundreds will never be reunited. Never. The United States authorities have lost all the contact information. They have no idea where their parents are, no idea where their families are, and they don't give a damn where they are. So what is going to happen to those children? And what is the pain of those families? So these are things that are just, they should be high on the headlines of the United States, and it's, you know, I'm glad you had that conversation with John Nichols, because, you know, anything that puts pressure on POTUS, the pesticide of the United States, Agent Orange, I think is really, really important. But we can't lose sight of what is central to the campaign of Donald Trump and the new right, the new Confederacy, which is the question of immigration. And it bothers me a lot that in the Democratic debates, this is not made a major item of discussion.
Yes, yeah, just
they can't take a pass on this. They have got to take it on, and they've got to challenge it face on as a violation of human rights.
Right. And it can't be just because this the whole issue of the kidnapping of the children, what is happening now, the horror that's happening to the migrants that are trying to make their way, and the white mailing of the U.S., the crackdown on Obrador and the Mexican government to do its dirty work for them, which is basically to attack these migrants and to keep them from getting anywhere near to the U.S. Border. And people kind of forget about that. It's like, well, it's not high in the news cycle. But Bill, finally, because we're going to have to continue this discussion and have you back. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that next week. But I'm also very worried about the way the new ways, some of which are old, of trying to divide black and brown communities here. And I wonder if you have some thoughts about that. It really is a worry, because when we look at some of the most impoverished people in the United States, you see indigenous people, you see immigrant people, obviously also black people. But we can't forget that and drink that Kool-Aid to divide us. Bill Gallegos.
Absolutely. And Margaret, I think you're getting to the most important question that we have to face as a progressive movement, as a left movement, which is the question of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we bring together at the core of this progressive, revolutionary, transformative movement that we want to build the 37 million people of the Chicano-Mexicano population in the U.S. and the 35 million people, African-American, 36 million African-Americans? The majority of African-American population resides in the South. The overwhelming majority, 90% of the 37 million Chicano-Mexicano population, resides in our historic pre-annexation areas in Texas, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. What does it mean if we can bring these two oppressed peoples together, not alone, but as a core of the alliance that we need to really win immediate transformation, immediate reforms, but also long-term transformation of this country? Because our two peoples, we have nothing to lose but our change. That is not a cliche. That is a reality for us. And we are the ones that will benefit the most from the kind of radical transformation that is at the heart of our struggles. And that's why this question of the annexation is important, because it's often overlooked in discussions about strategy.
Right. Well, Bill Gallegos, we're going to have to leave it there. We're waiting for our Campaigners for Black Lives segment. But please join us again just over very, very shortly so we can continue this discussion. And we hope then that you'll be able to share one of your poems with us, Bill Gallegos.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us.